Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's hard to be a serial killer and have remorse. I mean, you could cry yourself to death thinking about what you've done. They're usually justifying what they're doing for themselves.
For the very first time, the greatest minds in criminology have come together to dissect the psyches of some of the world's most prolific serial killers. These forensic psychiatrists, psychologists, and pathologists have an incredible depth of knowledge and often first-hand insight into these killers, helping us to understand what makes a monster. What follows is the second part of an interview with Dr. Richard Rappaport, recorded in July 2019 for Crime and Investigation's TV series Making a Monster. Dr. Rappaport is a California-based psychologist who has profiled and testified for numerous murder cases, including that of serial killer John Wayne Gacy. Having heard in the previous episode about Dr. Rappaport's interview with Gacy, here we get more of an insight into his work as a clinical psychologist. Warning, the subjects covered in this podcast are of a sensitive nature. Listener discretion advised.
Well, I'm a psychiatrist. I've been in practice 50 years. And I went to school in Philadelphia, and I went to the University of Pennsylvania as undergrad. I majored in philosophy. I read some things by Freud and some other psychiatrists, very minor kinds of things, really, but I loved reading about it, and it was very exciting to me. Plus, my philosophical reading was, I learned a lot in philosophy that I think applies to psychiatry, ways to think and ways to understand issues. And I know that a lot of things that I think about, not everybody else agrees with, which makes me feel it's too bad you don't understand. I don't feel it's too bad that I understand it this way. When I was in a residency, I happened to have to do a research project, and I used to like prison movies, so I decided, since I was learning about group therapy, I wanted to do group therapy in prison. I got permission to do that. And I started group therapy at Stateville Prison in the suburb of Chicago. And that's what eventually led to my getting calls from attorneys on the outside who learned about that. And I got invited to do some legal cases, which I had never been trained for. But I enjoyed that, and eventually it became a part of my practice. There's a lot of people that I see that are what they call restoration of sanity cases, people who have initially been judged to have been insane at the time of their initial crime, and then they're sent to state hospital for a year or two before they get a rehearing, and every couple of years they get a rehearing to see how they are, if their sanity has been restored. If they've been judged insane at the time of the crime, then once they're sane, then the time for them to be in a hospital or jail is limited, theoretically. Now, there are some courts where they say, well, he's insane, but he's going to serve 15 years. You know, so how do they know he's going to be insane for 15 years? Maybe sane in a year. But like in a hospital, if the person's well, they should be discharged soon thereafter. But they're combining the punishment idea with the medical or the psychiatric part. So I believe that that's a false thing. That's the wrong thing to do. I mean, if someone's insane, treat them like a medical case, and when they're well, let them go. The one that I worked on, down in Shreveport, I saw Nathaniel Code. He killed about 8 or 10 people, and one of them was his step-grandfather. They are angry, and this guy was very angry about things. And he was angry that he was prejudiced against him because he was black. And he was acting out about that. I saw, Ricky Green in Fort Worth, Texas. And he was just immature. I mean, he started pretty young, 17 or 18, trying to hurt people and kill people. And his father, I think, made him a killer because his father would shoot at the kids with a BB gun. He'd tell them to run away, just like be an obstacle for him to shoot at. And Ricky Green and his entire family wound up in prison, his father, his mother, and the sister. They were all criminals in some form. So he just didn't stop. First person he killed, Ricky killed, was a guy. And then he killed a couple of women. So he had mixed sexes. Most of them do one sex or another. Some do both. Some do one sex, one race or another. Some do both. But they all have their own reasons. And I think most of them, if not all of them, have been abused themselves. And it comes out in this way. I think Bundy said that his childhood was perfect. He had a really good childhood, and that's what he said. I don't know if it was true. I didn't examine him. But I think something has to go wrong. Now, I do think something different than I thought for at first. I think that people have some sort of inherent traits that are, say, abnormal, or that have the potential for leading for abnormality. And things happen along the way where those things are accentuated, either by the outside world or themselves. And it's just like they just spend their lifetime following that trend. I used to believe that people weren't necessarily evil. Although I've been asked that question in court. Do you believe he's really evil? And at one time I remember saying, I don't think people are evil. What I would call evil now is having this DNA, having the caricatures already inside of you, ready to go, that are more responsive to certain life events that cause that person to then go down that route. I mean, in this, you could divide this world to the good guys and the bad guys. Some guys are always in trouble, and some guys are hunting down the guys who are in trouble. You know, the cops or whatever, the FBI. But these guys who got in trouble had some proclivity for it, something innate in them that they had that chance to follow that route. And then there are life events that may straighten them out, and some events make it worse. I did a case once where I was asked to examine a guy who had, he and another friend, killed an old man. They picked him up in the parking lot and took him out to the Marine base outside of San Diego, and they killed this guy. And It turned out when I researched his past, he had been a foster child in four or five different homes. And when he was in a home where there were good people and he associated with good kids from that home, he was an exemplary student. He was a he was almost a professional runner. He was a successful cross-country runner. And when he got in homes where there was some bad influence, he followed that. And that's why he got in trouble killing somebody, because the guy he lived with led him that way. So he had a tendency to be either way. Many people who are subjected to abuse suffer an abused ego. So their self-image is tarnished early on. And they have a hard time feeling something good about themselves, either externally or internally. And then they get involved with people that are in the same, let's say the same ballpark they are, and they tend to have events, or they seek events or allow themselves to be affected by events that substantiate that original negative impression. And their life builds around that, and they never get out of it. And then there's people who do exactly the opposite.
We've heard how many of the serial killers that we've featured in Making a Monster suffered horrific abuse from a very young age, and that this abuse may have had a profound effect on the decisions that they have taken in later life. Why does committing a murder rectify a wrong against them?
There's two levels to it. One is a simple answer of revenge. Another is to work out something of the unconscious. And they can take out their feelings on other people to, not just for revenge, but as if there's a part of themselves that they project onto other people that they want to get rid of. Some other reasons that are probably not as classical, but those two things go on. A lot of times, the people who are same kind of people that are killers actions or behave in criminal ways. In other words, on a lesser scale, a less serious crime, but they're the same people who have felt injured, felt that the world's unfair, it's unjust. They don't have a fair shake in life, and they are attracted to that kind of venue all the time, over and over. And even when they're in jail and they suffer for that, they don't seem to feel a need to change. It's hard to be a serial killer and have remorse. I mean, you could cry yourself to death thinking about what you've done. But no, the psychopath doesn't have any standards of compassion, doesn't have any standards of right and wrong, and they're usually justifying what they're doing for themselves. I had a patient once who was talking about, this guy's an ordinary patient. He was I didn't think he was any kind of a murderer, really, but he was so angry with his father. He was plotting his father's death. I mean, he was going to kill his father. And he didn't say it all the time directly that way, I'm going to kill my father, but he said a lot of things that made me worry about it, that he was going to do that. And I had a talk with him one time where I told him that I was worried about his behavior and is acting out on his inclination to do that. So I warned him, and I spent more time dealing with that issue for him until he could see that that wasn't a solution to his feelings. And so as a small example, I had done group therapy in a prison, and these were guys who had killed or done some pretty violent crimes in most cases. And in talking to them about the things in their lives, and they were in therapy usually for years. My groups went on for years. And they came to understand where their anger was and what it was coming from and how it was directed. So I think they improved.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat. All from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Every person I see in a treatment situation or a forensic, it's always an obstacle at first. And the easier it goes in terms of becoming comfortable with the other person, the better it goes. Now, when I see a forensic person, it's only a limited time. As I say, usually my exams are around 4 hours. So I've got to establish a certain amount of rapport that I get them to give me this full story with an honest answer or honest information. And in a short time, that's not easy. But I start off with talking about a person's childhood, the very, very first things that they can remember. And sometimes when they talk about that, they're so surprised, it's so unusual that someone's asking about that. I think that they get some feeling of comfort from that. And once you get that started, it builds. Now, there are people that are extremely hostile to the questions. They don't want to answer questions. And you have to get them to comply. And lots of times they exaggerate and say, I had a wonderful childhood, no problems. I'll have to go into it a little deeper. You know, I get them to sometimes to admit things that they've covered up. And even in these people that I see in medication management, you know, the first time I see them, I take a little history. And it's given an hour to do this whole exam. And, you know, they'll just want a medication. But I take a history, and I want to know what happened to them when they were a child. And most of them will skip over being sexually abused, being raped, being molested. I mean, many of the women don't tell you that right away. And I sense a lot of times that there's more to it. And I'll get them to tell me, to disclose these things. Now, those things are extremely important. They don't think that they're important 25 or 30 years later when they're suffering anxiety and depression. But they are suffering from those early experiences which were covered up and which are part of their unconscious and which are defending against all their lives and which they don't admit to. Until they get into a situation like this. And I think sometimes they're gratified that they find someone that's interested enough to ask them. There's a group of serial killers that are the sexual sadist group, that is an inherent part of the crime and an inherent part of the motivation. In some of the cases, they want to experience sexual issues that are so outlandish that they would be arrested for them, or they would be shunned just by the people that they know. And so it becomes a battle of getting their ego or their instincts carried forth and going too far. Some of them feel guilty about the people that they've had sex with, and they want to get rid of the evidence of the evidence to themselves of that sexual behavior. It's as if they got rid of the person, they got rid of the deed that they committed. Most of the killers who've gone past the first few have planned their killing. I mean, they have a whole scenario, and they've enjoyed the kill before. They've had satisfaction out of it. Some guys you could call it pleasure. And they're gratified for whatever their internal mechanism is to want to do that. And if they're successful, then they got some sort of pleasure and relief from the stress of planning it and having it work. There's no formula for becoming a serial killer. I guess there would be some people that might have severe physical disabilities or disfigurement that could be feeling so negative about themselves that they might be motivated to subject other people to something that would disfigure them. Otherwise, I don't know why they would be more of a monster than anybody else.
Coming up next on Making a Monster, the Tapes, we have Professor Jethro Toomer discussing Eileen Wuornos. And, of course, watch Crime and Investigations TV show Making a Monster, Monday at 9 p.m. or catch up on demand. Tag your tweets with hashtag MakingAMonster and leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you. Or head to crimeandinvestigation.co.uk if you want to find out more about the series, with profiles on all the killers featured. Making a Monster, the Tapes features interviews recorded by Monster Films for the Crime and Investigation TV series and was voiced by me, Cherry Healy, produced by Sam Pearson and Chloe Frost, with editing by Joel Porter.
Serial killers are made, not born.
The greatest minds in criminology come together for the first time.
There are two questions. Who are they, and how did they get to be who they are?
I don't believe anyone is born a serial killer.
I do not want some of the stuff going through their minds to be running around inside mine.
We need to know the motivation and what they're getting out of it.
Serial killers are human beings, and they're not always predictable.
What is it that they're really trying to achieve in these killings?
No infant is going to grow into a serial killer if it is loved and nurtured and successful in life.
Distorted backgrounds produce distorted individuals.
If it can be imagined, no matter how depraved, it can be done.
Making a Monster, part of Serial Killer Season, new to Crime and Investigation.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered.
Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.